I'm talking to Sue Hallgarth about her book On the Rocks. Welcome.
Thank you. Pleased to be here.
And here we have her in the studio. This is a great looking book. She sort of snuck it to me while I was in a meeting a couple days ago, and I was glad it looked so good.
It even feels good, I think.
It does. It does.
Yeah.
It's a series that is just beginning, and it's the subtitle is A Willa Cather and Edith Lewis Mystery, and it's the title again is Off the Rocks. It's going to be launched next week.
On the 15th.
Okay.
That's right.
And launched with how?
Actually, it's already for sale almost anywhere you want to look, including the independent bookstores, Amazon, online. It's an e-book as well as this nice feeling book.
And it must be really exciting. This is a book that you worked on for about 20 years?
Well, something like that, yeah. I actually wrote the manuscript through about 20 years ago and then picked it up again. Mm.
Oh,
maybe 3 years ago.
Really?
Yeah.
That's interesting.
Yeah.
Well, I have to confess before we go on, I haven't finished the book.
It's all right.
And I didn't want to jump ahead because it's a mystery and that
it
would spoil the whole thing.
Right.
So, but I have read some of it and I've really been enjoying it. I remember reading a biography a couple of years ago of Willa Cather. And then I sort of reread some of her books.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't have the impression that you give here of her, but you've been studying her and were actually going to write a biography of her. And this brings a lot of her life and of Edith Lewis's life, a lot of information about it.
But it does.
The person you project is different from the person that I got from the book that I read.
I'm wondering which one you read, but it almost doesn't matter because you're right. My Willa Cather is very different from the standard view. And in fact, I originally was going to do a critical study of her novels and realized that what I had to say about those even was different from what most people were talking about at the time.
Oh.
And then I began to work on research for a biography because I realized I really needed to look at her life and make it clear that she was not this sort of, backwoods character, either from Virginia, where she was born, or Nebraska, mm-hmm. where she did most of her growing up.
Or gruff. I think of her as gruff.
You think of her as gruff?
Yes.
Well, she might have been, but actually, you know, she lived in Greenwich Village.
I know.
Off Park Avenue. Yeah. And went to the opera regularly. And in fact, Song of the Lark is based on the life, her own, but also Olive Fremstead, who was one of the biggest metropolitan opera stars at the time. This was a well-educated, well-informed, multi-talented woman who's not rough.
And not a recluse, which is another thing that people think of.
People
her.
At that time, particularly during the later years, the biographers and critics both would suggest that she became very reclusive, almost misanthropic, and that going to Grand Manan, this island in the Bay of Fundy, which is in New Brunswick, Canada,
mm-hmm.
Was really a way to kind of get away from the world. And
which obviously it wasn't.
Well, it was a way to go to something.
Mm.
And that's the kind of thing that, for whatever reason, biographers had just simply missed. And it wasn't until I was years into doing the research on her that I went to Grand Manan myself.
Well, before we go to that,
okay.
I think we should say why she's important for New Mexico and why we would want to talk about her in New Mexico. We should talk about her book, Death Comes from the
Death
Archbishop.
Death Comes from the Archbishop, sure, which was published in 1927. And as far as that's concerned, she actually did three books focusing on places in the Southwest. Walnut Canyon in Arizona comes in for Song of the Lark, and in the professor's house, it's Mesa Verde.
Mm.
But she spent a lot of time in New Mexico, and in particularly 1925 and 26, she and Edith Lewis were through here for most of the summers and stayed everywhere And in matter of fact, in Albuquerque, she met Rin Tin Tin at the, at the railroad station. but anyway, she was here. She was in Lamy. She was in Gallup. She was, you know, spending time, went to Acoma, and stayed quite a bit in Santa Fe at La Fonda, and then in Taos with Mabel Dodge Luhan.
Oh, okay, good.
Okay.
okay, so let's talk about where it's this book is situated. I just love the Bay of Fundy. I've only been there once, but I was thinking about how it seems so wild, and it seems close to civilization, but all of a sudden you're in this kind of wild, bizarre place. But I didn't know about the islands.
About Grand Manan in particular? Yeah. Grand Manan is still, I think, pretty unspoiled. Mm. I'll say that instead of wild. But but it's an absolutely gorgeous place. It's a place that Audubon visited, too, and did many of the very early sketches and stuffings of birds. But Willa and Edith found it in 1922. A librarian in New York City told them about it, who stayed there herself. And they used to get there by going to Campobello and then taking a ferry across. There was a train that went straight there.
Mm-hmm.
And it was out of the way. It was away. And Cather was always looking for good places to write and a way to get out of the hot New York City during the summers. And in 1922, they first went there and discovered what I discovered when I first went there, and that is Whale Cove Cottages, where there were 20-some women who would come every summer.
That's fantastic.
Professional, unmarried, career women. Yeah, independent women, as they used to call themselves then. Right. Right. It blew me away when I found that.
Yes. Mm-hmm. I just couldn't believe it. In fact, when it says professional women in the book, that's what you say first.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, well, I don't know who were the professional women back then? The book is set in the 1927 or so.
29, okay. Yeah.
So, but then later on, as you get to know them, you realize, well, yes, they were librarians and they were teachers and they were
social workers. Absolutely.
And professors and things like that. And,
exactly.
And I guess they all sort of this probably was a nicely shared secret kind of place to come.
It was, but not so unshared that there wasn't another one that developed at the other end of the island. And by the way, Grand Manan is a small island. There are five fishing villages, and there's still five fishing villages.
Oh.
Tourist trade is becoming more important, but it was then too. There were four or five hotels, kind of resort places. Oh. Whale Cove was one of them. And these professional women, career women, independent women, were going there to Whale Cove. Actually, that colony, if you will, began around 1902. And the people who started it, the three, graduated from the School of Gymnastics in Boston in the 1890s, and they got together and bought a farm and started this place for people to come. And they were joined by a fourth person who graduated from the Boston School of Cookery.
Well, we shouldn't say for people to come. It's for women to come.
It was for women to come. It now is for people to come.
Okay.
And probably by, I'd guess, maybe the mid-30s, it was already not so much a women's colony as it was a place for anybody to come.
Okay. And then Willa Cather and Edith Lewis built their own cottage.
Mm-hmm.
I like that kind of communality sort of atmosphere.
It's really interesting, as a matter of fact, what happened there. Or at least I think it's interesting because about 1925, 26, the people who developed it separated out, they surveyed out five or six plots of land where some of the, what they were called, were the cottage girls.
Mm-hmm.
Some of the cottage girls built their own cottages, and Willa and Edith were two of those. And so there was a ring of cottages around the central dining hall and lodge. And Edith and Willa and all of the others would take their meals there and, you know, do things with the others. Although I will say that Willa and Edith probably kept to themselves more because it was a place Willa worked.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But you could, that was another good thing about it, was that you could join the others to eat or you could not.
Exactly.
Depending on what was happening.
Right. Right.
Or how you felt, I guess. Mm-hmm. And now, actually, I think more of those, or at least more are being contemplated. I don't know whether women are actually building that right now, but they're certainly thinking about it.
Oh, I think that,
and
yeah.
Looking towards it.
Right. There have been more and more places for women to go to stay and enjoy each other's company and music festivals, that sort of thing, that weren't back then.
Yes. Oh, right. Okay.
Yeah.
Well, of course, and women were supposed to be with the men in their family and or with their husbands, and that was it.
Yes, increasingly so, as a matter of fact. I mean, this was after World War I, and the same thing happened after World War I that happened after World War II. More men were coming back, needing jobs, taking jobs.
Mm-hmm.
And so more women were actually, those who wanted to stay in careers, did not want families of their own, had a harder time.
And the other thing that we, of course, were leading up to the Depression at that time.
Yeah.
And you sort of have the, that's another kind of crisis that's a little bit off in the book that's, mm-hmm. I mean, not off, but
it's looming.
It's waiting. Looming, yes.
Yes,
that's it.
It is.
It's a looming crisis. And
yeah.
I love that.
Yeah.
That extra tension that it adds.
Right. Well, and not to give anything away, but you just had this, the interview about the Violence Against Women Act. Same thing was true then, and you'll see somewhere in the book that I sort of do a glancing reference to that too. I mean, not to the act, but violence against women, attitudes toward.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the other thing I was wondering, I am not one of those people who reads mysteries. There are some people who just, you know, go through the whole, like, get
right.
an author and they read all the mysteries. And that's not me. But so to me, it reminded me of Nancy Drew, which is the only series that I've done that
Did you?
With. But she was always jumping in her roadster and hurrying off places. And that happens in this also.
Well,
were you trying to sort of...
Actually, I've never read Nancy Drew.
Oh, okay.
No, and there really was a Rio.
Yes,
that,
but and I'm not sure what that was, but
it is a kind of roadster.
Okay,
yeah,
okay.
Yeah. And the woman who started the colony at the other end of the island drives it. Her name is Sabre Jane Briggs, and they're all real people.
Oh, she exists.
Yes, did.
Did. Yes.
Yeah, but
okay.
I have yes, and I've talked to her grandniece.
Oh, great.
Yeah.
Great. Okay.
Yeah.
So that wasn't an echo or anything like that.
No, I'm sorry.
And then another question I had is that this is going to be a series.
It is.
And it brings together a lot of things, maybe because it's on an island, but it brings together a lot of different elements with the fact that it's just outside the United States. It's just kind of between Canada and the United States
mm-hmm.
at a time when the Prohibition was happening, and so there's a lot of smuggling and things like that
yes.
happening. And it's this island with a certain number of characters, and then with the women who, you know, are the same ones that come back year after year.
Right.
So what are you going to do for a sequel?
For the next one?
Yeah, because I
it's
don't
not
see
going
where
to
you
be on
go.
Grand Manan.
Oh, okay.
Okay, it's going to be in Taos.
Oh.
And it's going to be when they're working on, when she's working on Death Comes for the Archbishop.
Great. Are you starting on it already?
I've started on it.
Oh, wonderful.
Yeah.